Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is May 21st, I think.
Mm-hmm.
2020. And this is episode 5.
No.
6.
Yes.
74. Yes?
Yes.
Yes? Okay, good. All right. I didn't get all 5 out, so it doesn't count. I said fa, and I pulled it back. It's like a chess. As long as you don't touch the board, you're still good.
Oh, is that as long as you don't let go of the piece? No? Maybe you've got different rules.
Yeah, that's how I always felt like it was, you take your fingers off the piece.
Yeah. We basically always played, like, if you've picked the piece up, you're committed.
You are moving that piece.
It's like, there's literally no
don't
legal
you
moves
dare
for that piece.
Put it back where it was.
There's no legal moves for the knight right now. Well, should have thought ahead. Forfeit your turn. I will say, playing chess with some of my family, there were multiple games. Not my immediate family; they couldn't give a shit. There were multiple games that just ended in the literal comedy board toss. Ah! I win now. Storm off. Great. Awesome. I have to go find that. This is why we only have one white rook, asshole. This is Radio Free Nintendo. John's out this week. He's off doing something, which is probably not super advisable if I had to guess, but that's okay. I'm joined today by Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And Mr. Guillaume Vayette.
Hello.
It's quite late because we recorded a Patreon podcast. If you want to hear our Patreon podcast, then you can go to Patreon.com/NWR. That's Patreon.com/NWR. Patreon.com/NWR for $1 a month. $1. A single dollar. One only. You will get access to the monthly Radio Free Nintendo exclusive podcast. It is not the kind of content you would hear on this show. It is, in fact, content exclusive for the patrons. And it is different because we want to make sure that we're not trying to deprive this show of content. This month, which is actually last month's episode, again, monthly, we did an episode where we discussed the media that we have been consuming during this extended time indoors that we have all been living through together, collectively. And, yeah, it's pretty fun. You should go take a listen. Again, it's $1 a month, and it's not just RFN. You don't just get RFN. You get a special color in the NWR Discord, which is real. You should go check it out, I think. I don't know. They were posting Sonic memes in there. And, like, critiquing the value of is Biggs the Cat still funny yesterday. So maybe not. Maybe don't. But you also get access to a Talk Nintendo podcast exclusives. You get access to a handful of other content. And you get access to the NWR Game Days, where they will play games with NWR staffers on Switch Online. Which takes me to a transition point. Because we are still soliciting your requests, your pitches, not requests, pitches for our Nintendo Switch Online Super NES and NES games retroactive. These are games that are available on those either one of those services. And what we want from you is a pitch for what game you want to hear us talk about. And honestly, what you want to play with us. Games that you think have interesting things to say about them. Interesting experiences to have. So send us your pitch. So a pitch isn't just the name of the game. It's why you think it's a good choice. To rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. That's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. These pitches, I want them in. Let's say by the time we record our next episode, we're gonna have to kind of close it off so we can deliberate amongst ourselves. Last week, I made fun of the fact we only had one pitch that wasn't for a game we had already played. I'm going to go ahead and say to that person, you wrote the email about the fact you recognized we had already talked about that game. So he responded to himself. Literally a day after we recorded the episode, making fun of the fact we'd already played that game. So don't take it personally. We've gotten a few more since then. There's been a couple that have come up a few times. And so that's great. That sort of helps guide our hands a little bit. We're not obliging ourselves. This is not a vote. But this is the opportunity for us to leverage games we already have access to. In some cases, have access to 3 or 4 different ways because the Nintendo Switch Online service is not an exclusive home for some of these products. But you can send us your suggestions and the reason for them to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Conveniently enough, transitioning yet again, that is also the jumping off point for our listener mail, because we are going to do listener mail this week. New business, kind of light for everybody. So we're just going to lead into some listener mail, do a little bit of a shorter episode, just, you know, get some variety going. Emails also go to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. That's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. John, what's that email address? Oh, he's not here because it's rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I've said the email address like 9 times. I've lost all sense of self.
It's enough.
Is it? Because John probably still doesn't know it.
That will do, James.
Thanks, Guillaume. Why don't you read the first email?
Sure. Andrew writes, "Gentlemen, in the 3+ years since its release, the Switch has been getting almost unprecedented levels of software support for a Nintendo console. From first party to indie to AAA, we've been spoiled with an almost overwhelming number of games to choose from. But I'm curious to hear if you guys can think of any gaming genres that you feel are underrepresented on Switch, or that you would like to see get more of a presence on the console throughout the rest of its lifespan. Thank you for all the hard work you put in each week."
I mean, hard work's a strong statement. Guillaume does. He edits the show. That's hard work.
Yeah. Well, I try to make it, yeah, to botch it as much as I can. I hope it shows.
I'm down for it.
This is
tough because we're all coming from the basis of having lived through the Wii U. Which the answer to this question is everything.
Parts, it's, you know,
except 2D platformers.
Other parts of our gaming lives were, you know, N64 and you know, some of this stuff as well. Yeah, so it's relatively speaking, you feel like you're spoiled for choice. I mean, certainly, it's going to be hard for me to feel like I'm a particularly sure footing on any of these sorts of suggestions, considering you're going to feel like, God, there's just so much stuff in general that if you really, you know, put your mind to it, you could probably find something that scratches the itch.
Yeah, I mean, nothing is missing. Like, there's like manifestly not there.
But it might not be the what you want to see, though. Like, I for whatever reason, I didn't decide, but a while ago, I felt like playing Arcade Racers, and I'm not especially interested in playing kind of mobile like games, and that seems to be a lot of the offering that we have on Switch. That's a free-to-play or stuff that comes from free-to-play, and just the wrapping of those games. Like, they can look good, they can play good. I'm not saying that they don't, but just the fact that playing feels like a meter with every race, and like, oh, I get some points, and like, oh, 3 different kinds of currencies unlock these cards that if I get all the cards for this car, I'll get this car, maybe. I still don't know.
The advancement structure.
Yeah, so all of that is a real turnoff. So I'm more tempted to just I've actually bought some PlayStation 2 games before times when I could still go to a used game store. So I'll play those before I play one of the games on Switch. I think that Grid Autosport is supposed to be pretty good. And that's not, you know, from mobile. So I it's just a matter of getting it and playing it. But
you got the Burnout remakes coming, right?
Yeah, but I was not a fan of Burnout Paradise, and so I'm not especially tempted to pay what, like, full price. Is it a $60 game or $50?
I love Burnout Paradise, but I also played it like 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's pretty old. I have it on my PlayStation 3, which is still hooked up to the TV, so I could play that if I wanted to.
Well, I suppose
I don't.
That's like an additional layer to this question, in the sense that it's probably more of an issue if, for whatever reason, you know, you're specifically looking for things that are pretty original. Or at least original within the last few years or so, compared to, you know, the sort of pretty formidable catalogue of kind of classic kind of games in the various genres that are making their way to Switch. I mean, for me, I'm tempted to talk about, as I always am, because I've always loved the genre and it's never been particularly well represented on anything at any time, is, you know, kind of your rail shooter type of deals, you know, like, mm-hmm. like obviously there's a Panzer Dragoon remake out, but it is a remake. So yeah, if you're looking for more original kind of stuff, not just there, but elsewhere, maybe that makes it, you know, a little easier to say, well, actually, there hasn't been that many, in this particular area. But at the same time, like I said, it's like, if I was really desperate, first of all, I would have bought the Panzer Dragoon remake at this point and started playing it. You know, so it's hard for me to say with any authority, like, yes, this is severely lacking. You know, this is a dreadful missed opportunity on the platform when I haven't even exhausted all my options.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, I joked earlier that we went through the real dark times for stuff, but I mean, legitimately, like, unless 2D platformers was your jam on the Wii U, you probably felt left out because it had plenty of those, but otherwise, meh. So it is a little bit at this point to feel, like I'm being unfair, but racing was actually one of the genres that I had kind of highlighted it. There's a number of arcade kart style racers out there, presumably just trying to go off the success of Mario Kart.
It makes sense considering that's been like probably like the purchase at the point of, you know, buying the console for so many people. Mm-hmm. It's got to be a lot of developers out there thinking, well, at some point, you know, it's going to kind of come back around and they're going to want something, you know, that scratches that same itch, but, you know, a different product, however many months later or whatever.
Yeah. I think sports in general is somewhat lacking on Switch. I mean, EA made a go of it once with Madden, I think.
I don't know.
Madden, no, they didn't. Madden's
no, it was never on there.
We've got FIFA.
Yeah, FIFA was on like FIFA. Once, and then it's kind of, I think it's been like a complete phone in since, right? Like the Legacy Edition thing.
Yeah, it's basically the Xbox 360 PS3 one they make for like Brazil.
But it's like, it is a roster swap past a certain point. But so, yeah, I mean, it's certainly EA Sports in particular has been pretty damn thin.
And NBA 2K is just bad. Like, honestly, I would play a good NBA game, but
it's like on sale at the moment for like loose change.
Yeah,
like in whatever region you're in, like a few hundred yen in Japan, a couple of quid over here, like that's what it's on sale for, right? So I'm assuming it has not had massive success on the platform.
Well, the problem is, I don't think the Switch version is very good, but also it's basically just a mobile game. Like it's just wrapped up in ways they try to extract money out of you to make the timers go faster, and that sucks. Don't do that. If I'm giving you $60 for a game, let me fucking play the game. Baseball has had a rough go of it lately in general, but that's actually being somewhat alleviated. I'm playing Super Mega Baseball 3 right now. The show is going multi-platform. I think MLB sort of pushed Sony pretty hard on this one because there wasn't really anybody else making a baseball game.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, Microsoft and Nintendo both can make one. They just aren't. So the show's coming and the show's great, so that'll be cool. I'm probably gonna play it on my PS4 though, because I want to watch it in 4K. I just bought a 4K TV, for God's sake. But you know, in terms of like sports, it's pretty barren. And even arcade sports, like Nintendo's really not put a sports game out, or not much of, they put a golf game out, right? And tennis. They put a tennis game out.
Tennis, just tennis. Golf is not here yet. I mean, no, exactly. I mean, a lot of the arcade-y kind of stuff is like left to indies again. Like, yeah, this is the problem. In certain cases, I could probably say something, and then there's probably like a pretty good indie game that services that I might even have known about in the past and just forgotten. Sure. But I can think in the arcade sports space, you know, obviously, like Golf Story is a pretty kind of good. replacement for Nintendo doing something in the kind of Mario Golf, but although they haven't done that kind of Mario Golf game in a long time.
Well, and I actually don't feel like it was. Like, it's fine and it's a good game, and I don't want to make it denigrate the game's quality. And I'm looking forward to Sports Story, but it never felt like it was about the sport. The sport was just sort of like a window dressing to them telling the story they wanted to tell. Whereas in like the Mario Tennis and Mario Golf games, like you would just go play tennis sometimes just to get better at playing tennis, and you were preparing for the story events. And that was really like, I'm practicing to get better at the game of tennis. Like I feel like there could have been more of that, or character progression stuff. And but still, I mean, it's a good game in and of itself, but it's really more about the JRPG component than the game.
Yeah, you've got sport. Obviously with something like golf again. I mean, if it's not indie, then you've got like retro stuff, you know, like right. You know, something like golf. Well, I was thinking about the Neo Geo.
Turf Masters.
Yeah, either Turf Masters or Big Tournament Golf, I think, depending
big
on.
Big Tournament Golf!
Yeah, where you were in the world, stuff like that. So, you know, but there's, again, especially with the, like, ridiculous amount of like, arcade archives releases and stuff, like, in a number of places, you could probably find something to kind of to get you where you want to go, but not necessarily something that's entirely new. But again, I mean, if it's a case of you've not played it before, then I don't see why the fact that it's just, you know, originated years ago should be off-putting in itself.
Sure. Baseball Stars 2 is great. Baseball Star, if you play Baseball Stars 2 and then go play Super Mega Baseball, you're going to go, And justifiably, I mean, Baseball Stars 2 is standing on the shoulder of its own lineage. But like, even if you want to get into, and I'm using air quotes for sports, like sports entertainment. God, I love that fucking phrase. Oh, it's like, now that I know the history of it, I love it even more.
To be fair, like, my experience of sports a lot of the time has not been entertaining at all. It's just been depressing. So, I mean, I think it is a distinct concept.
Well, it's the beauty of it, as somebody explained to me, as gaming commissions govern sport in states, but if it's sports entertainment, fuck you, we don't have to follow any gaming commission rules. which is the carny shit I live for. But, you know, WWE games stopped coming to Switch. They're going to have this weird Battlegrounds thing that looks like shit, but that's not, you know, whatever.
God, I saw like a screenshot of the super deformed thing that's going
on.
It's
bad.
There.
It's really hideous.
Yeah, it did not look. You know, it's stylized. I'm perfectly happy with stylized things, but you know, there's a good and a bad way to do it, or probably many good ways and many bad ways of doing it. But you know what I mean.
Somebody described the characters in a way that's incredibly offensive, and I'm not going to say it, but if you look at them, you could probably figure it out. And now that's all I see, and it's terrible, and I feel awful about it. But at the same time, it's like, it's WWE, so they would actually do that if they could. But we didn't get Fire Pro on Switch. Like, fucking Fire Pro should be on Switch. Fire Pro should be on. I should be able to play Fire Pro on any device with a screen. Like, the world needs more Fire Pro. It needs to be out there. But there's, you know, combat sports in general. Boxing's not really represented on Switch. Unless you want to do, what is it, Your Shape Boxing or whatever that fucking thing was called.
It was fitness boxing. Or is that a regional disparity?
No, it is fitness boxing. Your Shape Boxing was a different boxing game on Wii. Which, again, there are things in my brain because of the show that are just taking up space. But I mean, it just in general, it's kind of less represented than games historically have represented sports in video games. Let's put it that way.
No, it's true. I mean, especially kind of the whole like officially licensed, up to date, you know, kind of interfacing with, you know, the biggest leagues. Like, it's the Switch is weak in that area now. Like, gameplay wise, right, you know, you might be able to find something, you know, that gets you where you want to go. But certainly, if you want that whole package together, it's been a good long while since I really played like Madden regularly or FIFA. It's something I did in the past. You know, kind of probably up through like GameCube, really, but Yeah, it's been a while for me. I don't have any great desire for it, so it's not like I've been waiting with bated breath. But it does seem like something of a gap, but also one must think, they just don't see the market there, really. And I guess things like the NBA 2K going for, a few coppers or whatever doesn't dissuade anyone from that notion.
You gotta pay $3.99 to get the newest Nike shoes in game, so you get better jump stats.
Yeah, I suppose it's the first hit's almost free kind of situation.
Yeah, it's fucking video games, man. Here we are. I don't think the NBA Jam port ever came to Switch, which it should. It's pretty fun. Mm. Maybe it did.
No, I don't think it has.
It's pretty good. But anybody else got one?
Still like to see some more actual top line 3D platformers. It's not as if you don't have them, because you've got Odyssey. I liked New Super Lucky's Tale. Ukulele's there, which I haven't played, so we're back to that thing again, where it's like I haven't even exhausted my notable kind of potential games, and that's just off the top of my head. But it's another genre that I kind of feel like has not been that well served for a long time, really. I think probably, especially since 2D platformers kind of came back into vogue, it's just easier to do a good one of those, I think, is the biggest thing. But it appeals to a lot of the same people. So I think that's behind it a lot, but presumably this business about Super Mario 3D remakes could sort of fill some of that void. But I don't know whether that would spark more such efforts, or would probably just maybe cannibalize them, as likely as anything.
Yeah, there's just a number of specific games that I'd like to see from bigger third parties. I understand there are reasons why they're not coming to Switch, but it's still disappointing. At this point, I thought maybe Nier Automata would have, Square would have found a way to get that to Switch, but clearly that's not happening. So basically, at some point, I'm going to have to buy a cheap PlayStation 4 and go pick up all the games that I've been
It did get onto Xbox, waiting. Didn't it?
I've got none of those, right? My PC at this point is too old to play anything from that generation. It would have been good to get on Switch.
It hadn't stayed Sony exclusive, but it's still a different matter to...
But again, it's still that situation where this game is coming to all the platforms, except, not even in small characters, but left unsaid is that, every platform but Nintendo doesn't count. That's something that we started seeing in the Wii days, and it's still true now.
Yep.
Yeah, so it maintained decent parity within the GameCube era, considering it wasn't exactly setting the world on fire sales-wise.
Yeah.
Because, we've got to think about it as well, especially vis-a-vis Western third parties, is that over the life of that generation, it was pretty much neck and neck with Xbox. But, of course, even though it wasn't a big success in Japan, it was much more significant than Xbox in Japan. So if you're looking at just the Western markets, it was behind Xbox by a reasonable margin. So it was not considering that, considering how niche it was, it did okay with in terms of the kinds of support it got from third parties. But once you had some of that still on GameCube, and then once you get to Wii, where Nintendo sidesteps out of the whole technological kind of warfare element of the console competition, then it really kind of kicked in then.
And I get it, because having to make the game twice already sucks. Having to really make it a third time sucks even more. And it was especially true during the Wii era, because the 360 and PS3 were so different that if you wanted to make...
Yeah, that's true.
You basically had to remake the game.
No, I mean, there, I guess there were pretty solid differences, you know, with PS2, GameCube, and Xbox, but it really felt like, especially because you were going to HD with in the first place, that there was a more solid kind of barriers across the development of, like, sort of doing Xbox and PlayStation in that go round.
Yeah, one of the things that I've been watching during this pandemic is they basically run 6 hours of streams every day on Giant Bomb. And one of the things they did is they revived the old podcast they used to do, some of the old timers when they were at GameStop or GameSpot before they all got fired or quit. And they were basically talking about the PS2 Xbox era. And what it was they made the game on the PS2. They then figured out how to just do the bare minimum work to make it work on Xbox because the market demanded they did. And basically, if it looked better, it was largely just because the Xbox had more horsepower. Like, there was no real effort put into, like, okay, now we got to make the Xbox
the actual optimization for the Xbox specifically.
Yeah. And then if there was a GameCube version, it was basically the same thing of, like, okay, we made the PS2 version on its wanky hardware. Let's go do, because the PS2 has a really goofy hardware set.
Yeah, but everybody had to just get with the goofs because it was such a juggernaut.
Let's just try to push it into the GameCube and hope for the best. And that kind of shit, much less important now because the Xbox and the PlayStation are essentially, in this realm of PC, and Nintendo is different chipset, but still is in not in weird uncharted territory. So you can kind of make it work. It's better now lately. But still, God, there's some stuff that I just miss. I miss. You could even say, like, first person shooters. We get some on Switch, but not.
Yeah, and some of the ones you wouldn't expect necessarily going in. Like, right. When you're talking about, obviously it's not simultaneous, but Doom Eternal is on its way. Doom 2016. Is already out. Obviously, it came later, and stuff like Wolfenstein 2 and the co-op Wolfenstein and all that. Like, those sorts of games, not necessarily ones that you would have guessed, just like, thinking ahead into this generation before it started, would be things you'd get. But yeah, in other ways, maybe you're lacking them.
Yeah, it's basically, once you leave that publisher, it's all bets are off. I mean, there's been some indie stuff made too, but yeah, it's not a ton of these games out there. There's some third person shooters in, like, the survival space, or your various, like, battle royale games. Again, it's all relative. First person shooters on Wii U, you could probably count on one hand.
Yeah, I think it's just generally, I think with Switch, I think it's more like specific games or specific developers than it is entire genres. Like, that kind of is certainly my feeling, and just the other feeling of just, there's just so much stuff that I will never get around to all the things I have, not just like passing, but significant interest in. So, it's difficult to be particularly sort of put out of place about any particular absence or weakness.
Cool. All right. I will read the next email. It's a long one. GX writes, "Dear RFN crew, while most can agree Nintendo is quite skilled at developing games, they're frequently criticized for aspects like online policy, retro game service updates, and account use limitations. This is a long-standing issue as far back as the Wii, or even further if you include things like the GameCube network adapter failing to get significant support or single-use peripherals. We're firmly in the era of games where the tentpole releases are games as a service, but Nintendo has historically struggled with services. Purchasing accounts have been attached to hardware. I've had three entirely distinct Nintendo accounts across the last three generations of hardware. Wii Channels and Miiverse didn't survive generation to generation, and online systems seem to constantly fail to anticipate what players see as the most basic usability. I don't mean to imply it doesn't happen for other companies. We live in a world where Xbox One, TV, PlayStation Home, and the last time Sony put 3G in the Vita for reasons best known only to them. But we're still dealing with Nintendo taking two steps forward and one step back. He didn't phrase it as a question, just ends in a question mark. On the basic features we expect. Is there something innate to Nintendo's structure or philosophies that keeps them from making effective services? Is it that we're still dealing with the only hardware designer that doesn't have tendrils in 20 other industries? Does Nintendo focus so much on the immediate that they fail to anticipate how services might need to evolve or be maintained? Are they underestimating what people's comfortable and knowledgeable doing in 2020? Are we dealing with an overly protective, kid-safe Nintendo, or is this just a pure resource issue, with Nintendo having less time, energy, and people dedicated to infrastructure than their contemporaries? And on a positive note, what Nintendo services did you feel especially satisfied with? Thanks for going a little less sane so we can all stay a little more. God damn, that's dark. TV, I was very satisfied with.
I especially was very satisfied with.
Service got better by not having access.
Yeah. For I didn't have cable, so it was useless. Like, I didn't have any kind of service, TV. Yeah, I don't know. What was TV for again?
It was a companion app. So basically, we talked about it on an episode where I just played with it. But like, I think I had a football game on at the time, and they had like some stats and stuff that were coming up at the game, and like certain broadcasts would have extra detail. Nintendo didn't run it; they had just licensed it from somebody else.
Right. The website Just Watch also does the same kind of like tells you where you can watch stuff.
Yeah, but it was more than that. It was like there would be things going along with the episode that you're watching too, like.
Right. But that content. Was a time when, shows like Lost, I think, kind of started this thing where, like, oh, like, you can chat with people as you're watching the show and, like, discuss the episode as you're watching it. And it was this whole second screen experience. But, like, we've heard that from Microsoft for video games, but it was also for the TV. Surface. And yeah. I bet
some of those got salty as the seasons went on, didn't
they? The only thing I'd say about the show is it sucks.
People like to have lots of theories and like, oh, where is this all going? And like, oh, don't worry,
nowhere.
You've got a plan.
It's going nowhere.
Yeah, for everything that's happening. And then, yeah, not really. That didn't turn out to be the case. But, yeah, anyway.
Don't watch Lost, kids. You'll just be disappointed like 400 hours later.
But, yeah, anyway. So, TV. Is that – so that's something that you're – pleased with?
There's your facetious answer, right? That we've got.
Yeah, we got no. Legitimately, no. But it was amusing. Like, so it sort of goes in the face of what GX was talking about. They sat down and like engineered this thing, and put a goddamn button on the Nintendo Wii U gamepad.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I mean, the button was for operating the TV remote capacity.
Right, but it would also. The TV was accessible from that menu.
Yeah, it was a permanent light fixture, or at least, you know, I guess eventually they removed it, so it wasn't entirely permanent, but it was sort of envisioned to be a permanent fixture, like, on your kind of menu on the bottom.
Right.
You had, like, all those icons for, like, friend list and all that, and
it
TV
might still
was
be
one.
There.
TV now was one. It may have only got pulled from the European one once they realized they were never actually going to launch it. Outside of America, but I mean, I think the reason why that, because it seems it's a bit of a weird thing for them to like put any effort into, you know, this sort of very like off the beaten path kind of, you know, given their sort of we only focus on games type of reputation.
Well, it had to have something to do with the popularity of the Netflix app on the Wii.
Yes, I think that is definitely a big part in the genesis. And the second part of it is that the Wii U was built around this idea of second screen like, you know, uses in various forms, you know, like that, you know, the entire platform has this kind of two screen element to it. So it's like, it kind of extends from that. And they're like, okay, well, actually now, if you had, you know, whatever, whether it's streaming services or anything like, then, you know, we've got this second screen that could somehow augment it rather than just, oh, well, the Wii was an online capable box that a lot of people had in their home. So it ended up having Netflix on it a lot. But yeah, so it's a weird kind of outgrowth of a couple of things there. Just the design of the system and, you know, the habits of its predecessor, which was that based on a disc? Is that right?
Yeah, I don't. It wasn't forever, but originally, Netflix was on a disc. Yes.
Yeah, this is kind of funny to think about. But,
it's hilarious. So, because I definitely watched Wii Netflix without a disc because I got there late, but it did launch on a disc originally.
Yeah. So,
which
yeah,
is
that,
stupid.
Like I said, I think there's plenty of good points that GX raises in terms of, I think you've got, you know, Nintendo is not the enormous sort of entity, multimedia, you know, the sort of giant that, you know, its competitors are. And also, you know, it's a question of priorities a lot of the time in terms of what resources they have. Presumably, obviously all you could do is make, you know, kind of vague guesses in this realm. We don't have a particularly robust understanding of exactly what they've got to throw around in this sort of realm. But I think it's reasonable to think that they've got enough resources to do better in these sorts of areas, but I don't think it ranks particularly high with their priority list to make that happen. It always seems to be, you know, that other aspects of the hardware design, for instance, when a new system is being prepared and all that, and, you know, the other aspects of the business strategy come first. And then it's about, okay, well, how do we kind of bolt this other stuff onto it as best we can? And, you know, from there, you're going to get things that are not completely kind of formed or polished in their kind of your conception and then their execution. Obviously they'll continue to, the whole like two steps forward, one back sort of construction is like, well, they will make progress, but
right,
you'll always feel like they're not making progress as quickly as they could or perhaps should. But that's just the nature of, you know, I think a company of their size having the priorities that they have. Like I'm sure there's some element of it that you could put down to pure execution and like that it just could be better, but it's not. And there's probably an element that's to do with, oh, well, we're a bit risk averse. So we don't want to be like that, sprawling and connected and all that, because it'll get us in trouble. And that's probably true too. So I'm sure it's a combination of all these sorts of factors.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things you touched on, you know, Nintendo is not a multinational conglomerate with 9 CEOs. Like it's, you know, we used to make commentary on it, and it wasn't jokes. I mean, it was serious. Like Sony at one point devolved into presidential knife fighting as they were all trying to be the one to stab Sir Howard Stringer, in the back, and take over the company, because that company has a million appendages and none of them played nice with each other. Microsoft, and I'm not joking, I know someone who was involved in one of these, at one point had 3 divisions making cell phone hardware that were incompatible with one another.
And
two
of them were making them for Batman.
Well, it's even better because I believe that 2 of them were in the same building but weren't allowed to talk to each other. And
team
so,
of
like,
rivals,
you have,
James. Team of rivals.
That's right. So, when you're talking about the scale of these companies, think about a company that buys Nokia, which is a big company, on a different continent, despite having literally 2 phone shops already in the building. And just fucking get a third one. I mean, fuck it. you're not dealing, Nintendo isn't not just not on their scale, they're not in their universe. They're a completely different configuration. Nintendo is a playing card company that made a good bet. Like that's what you're looking at here. Microsoft is a conglomerate that, you know, gets billions of dollars of revenue just so people can access friggin' Excel. Like it's a world of difference. And so when you have that kind of a war chest, we talk about Nintendo's cash on hand. It's a lot. It's a staggering amount of cash.
Especially relative to their size. Yeah, because, right. And again, a lot of that is to bring the risk-averse point back in. That is a feature of their approach, right, over a long, long period of time. And it's not as if, you know, a company of their size couldn't do things differently, because they certainly could. You know, I mean, you could be Sega that had all the kind of backstabbing and infighting.
That's right.
You know, in the '90s, you know, like you could do that while being
or literal Yakuza involvement.
But you're much less likely to survive it. It's the problem when you're smaller. The thing about when you're the gigantic company with all this sort of cross subsidy potential is that you can weather a lot of bad decisions. Bad sort of economic conditions, all sorts of things that smaller, you know, companies just can't.
And if you are a huge company, if you're a Sony, let's say Sony does something real, real messed up, something really outrageously bad. By the way, they've done these before. Guess who's not going to come down on them too hard? The Japanese government. Their home government is going to be like, we really can't. I mean, we have to be somewhat. It's a prestige company inside the nation. So like, there's a certain protection that comes from being jive fucking gigantic. That Nintendo might get some because of the cultural value it has for Japan as a prestige, but they're not going to get the same degree of protection. Microsoft is effectively untouchable because they have components of their business in, I would guess, every state in the U.S., probably as many representative districts as they can muster. They've got them all over Europe, even though they know they're almost certainly not going to get much in the way of a fair shake in European, like, courts and stuff. They still spend the money to make sure they get the coverage, get the political goodwill. You know, these companies are huge and connected and well run, and well, Sony questionably run, but well orchestrated. The challenge, if you're Nintendo, is Sony and Microsoft came to video games from related technology they had already made a major play in. You know, Sony was dominating the portable music industry. They were stepping into film in the 90s. I don't think they had really set themselves up. They'd been in they stepped into film from music, where they had been forever.
Yeah.
They stepped into music, I want to say, at one point I knew how they got into music, but basically they came into it from a different brand, or different, you know, they walked their way into it. And that path eventually led them to the games industry.
Yeah, both Sony and Microsoft kind of did, you know, some partnership type stuff with existing players before they went all in themselves. Right. Sony with Nintendo, and of course Sega. And
powered by Windows CE.
Yeah, Dreamcast. You know, and I think, you know, they talk about just buying Sega out at some point.
Everybody did. from the sounds of it, everybody went to Sega and like, look, what's the number?
Unless this was one of those buy them out boy scenarios.
But from Microsoft's standpoint, it probably literally was like, whatever. Just, I mean, because it'd be a drop in the bucket. Fuck it. Whatever the number is, give it to them. Nintendo probably made a much more surreptitious offer of, this is what we are looking to do. Here's the partnership plan we have in mind for you. This is the number. This is the much we can offer. Whereas Microsoft probably just sent, I don't know, Jay Allard to Japan and just said, fucking, here's the checkbook. Figure it out. Because again, you're talking about scale. But Sony and Microsoft got to gaming through other related technology and stuff. Nintendo got through gaming largely on a whim. Like, they got through from the light gun, from Gunpei Yokoi's light gun. Like, that's how they got to gaming. That got them to arcades, and then arcades got them to home gaming. They don't have corollary brands that sit on the periphery that they can sort of cross leverage development with. They don't have a TV brand that they can say like, well, Sony doesn't do that because Sony's got, again, Sony and the Backstabbers is coming to a theater near you at some point. But, you know, Microsoft has all these services that exist on the periphery that aren't gaming services, but are, you know, cross-leveraged and cross-built. Nintendo can't play in that space. They don't have the resources because gaming isn't the primary push for any of these companies. It's a sub-brand. So Nintendo, very smartly, they talked about wanting to branch out, but they're not going to branch out into live services the same way that, you know, these companies can. They're going to branch out into theme parks and media production. They probably view themselves as more of a, and this is not, again, we're talking about scale, so I'm about to step into the biggest fucking landmine of scale in the world. They probably think of themselves in Disney terminology, where Disney is a sprawling mass media juggernaut, unstoppable force. But they're actually not, you know, they stay in the entertainment business by and large. You know, they don't, they have some forays into the resort space, obviously, and into like cruise lines. Again, not the most lucrative business these days. But it's still all to their core entertainment business. They don't have a technology division. They have some technology platforms that they use to distribute their content. And that's probably more in the model Nintendo went with. And you can actually look at it. You know, they've now done a movie deal. Besides that movie deal. They've done the theme park stuff. They have expanded their retail space, although, you know, with trepidation. They talked about, I don't know if they've actually done it. Yeah, I guess they have. Expanding merchandising. It's really, they're growing as a media brand rather than as a technology company.
Yeah, it's about the points of contact with their IP thing rather than, right, like, yeah, becoming more kind of capable as a company, right, you know, from a technology standpoint. And I do think that probably has a lot to do with what GX talks about in terms of, you know, the being focused on the immediate, a lot of, especially when they've had some of these kind of trying times that they've had, you know, various points where things have seemed like, you know, this position that, like you said, they kind of somewhat fell into in the video game sort of sector. It looked like it could slip, you know, things like, you know, when, you know, Sony's entering the portable space, you know, and they have come up with the DS, or of course, you know, the Switch after the, you know, Wii U did not do very well and 3DS was clearly running out of steam. You know, these are really critical junctures in the company's life, and you've just got to get the core functionality and, you know, their sort of core business elements sound. You've got to get those things locked in and get them right. Otherwise, you know, you might be looking at just being wiped out of this, you know, sector altogether. And so, right, at that point, you just, you know, anything that can be kind of considered ancillary to that core mission is going to be treated as such. And yeah, you know, some of these kinds of services and, you know, kind of functionalities that go along with it, they feel, you know, very ancillary, very, you know, not integrated, which is, you know, obviously ends up being a bit of a shame. And then there's some decisions that just kind of reek of a very different kind of thinking than anyone else might employ, you know, like with the cloud save stuff with Animal Crossing. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, they look at things differently than a lot of people would. I think that explains some of it.
Yeah. Nobody is like, man, we talked about, like, hey, they are really militant about time travel for some reason. Like, does it make sense?
Yeah, but I think it's pretty easy to time travel in Animal Crossing.
It seems to be.
I've not done it. It kind of seems like it's a bit defeated the purpose of the game to me. But, you know, I mean, like, from everything I've seen online, it suggests that, you know, people have been doing it, and it's not like it's like this. Yeah, they've like worked really hard to stamp it out or anything. So I'm still not sure why. Yeah, because I mean, with Animal Crossing, it's such a case of, like, you know, you lose that thread of your island, you know, with the save file represents, and people are going to fall off it hard. So it's kind of important to secure it, but...
Yeah, like, I get it more with things like Pokemon, but even then, it's a limited value. But still, maybe if you have cloud saves, all it needed to do was before you could trade, it updated your cloud save. Like, there. I've solved the problem for you, Nintendo. If you want to make a trade, your cloud save has to get synced first. Or second, I guess, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, they've talked about the need to diversify, and it really came up when they were having the dark times. Because they didn't, you know, they were a one-trick company. You know, if their games business was lagging, that was it. Like, they, you know, they got their Pokemon cut, but, you know, they didn't really get anything else. And so what I think you might see them do instead, you know, right now they're doing all these things as partnerships. You know, they're partnering to make more merchandise. They're partnering to run a theme park. They are partnering to produce a film. If you see them start spending money to produce a film, to make more merchandise, probably not to run a theme park, because they've already built a friggin' theme park. They're not going to build a second one. Well, I mean, they are, but in Orlando, in the same company. That's where you could start seeing, like, yeah, they're really leaning in, because they're investing their own resources, not just their own IP.
No, right, so now, that's been the thing. I mean, over the years... You know, especially, you know, I mean, if you think of the decades that they've been in operation, and there've been some leaner times, but generally the way they've run things, they've been routinely profitable. It's just been kind of degrees of profitability, and, you know, a more aggressive, you know, less risk averse approach would have meant that, you know, if you kept kind of investing those profits into sort of increasing the kind of productive potential of the company, they could be a lot larger today than they are. You know, but they've chosen not to, because it's, I think it is a generally kind of risk averse philosophy that they've got. And so, yeah, if they were to start putting their own money more so into some venture, I think that would kind of represent quite an interesting break with tradition. That their diversification efforts so far have not really represented.
Right. Even their mobile offerings. Now, Intelligent Systems made Fire Emblem Heroes. I can't remember which one's which. Which one's the...
Heroes is the mobile game, right? I mean, I've not played it, but...
Yeah, I always mix that one up with the Musou. Warriors.
Warriors.
Yeah. It's not... God damn, those names are too close. So it's not, I mean, they made that game, but still, most of the mobile stuff is being co-developed outside. So they don't get to blame anybody else for what that game has become, but whatever. But even then, in their mobile space, they have severely slowed down in terms of their output. Which seems like an impossible statement.
Well, and also just under-delivered to what they had advised investors to expect.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Like, we made jokes about Mario Kart Tour. That game was like a year late. But it's also basically been the last thing they put out. So,
again, I think it's a question of priorities as well, isn't it? And like I said, I think you've got, with Nintendo, you've got their kind of fundamental priorities, but then you've also got their kind of situational priorities, how they shift in different situations. And as you said, you know, when they were really struggling with the Wii U and your 3DS sort of doing okay, but, you know, not setting the world on fire, so, you know, diversification efforts, quality of life, all this kind of stuff. Yeah, they, or at least they wanted to convey the impression that, you know, these were higher priorities. And of course, right, once we find ourselves on surer footing with the Switch setting a very nice pace for building its install base around the world, those things fall down the priority list, because it's just, not near. First of all, I think some of it is simply a messaging exercise with their investors, you know, that they don't need to allay their concerns as much when, you know, the results are not nearly as concerning now as they were then. But also there's just a legitimate element to it. It's just, it's not as urgent anymore to kind of, you know, get these things up and running fast.
And I wrote about the quality of life thing back when it was announced and wrote way too much for Nintendo World Report, just way outside the bounds of what that site is built to handle. Literally, in fact. And at the time that there was green space in that area, that space is largely no longer green. And so Nintendo backed away from it. So they were quite content to step into a different technology space when that space was open, when that space wasn't going to be a battleground. But now, you know, quality of life technology is a war zone. Like it was originally sort of like the domain of startups, you know, these companies that have a product they developed. It was cheap. It was relatively easy, and they would put them out there, and then they would raise a bunch of capital, and they wouldn't make money for a long time. A lot of these startups got bought out by Google or Amazon or other companies that are giant megaliths. And guess what? Now it's the battleground of giants. And Nintendo looked around and said, nah, I'm good. Peace. The last thing we heard about quality of life was the Pokemon Sleep Monitor, which is some like weird J&J Dream Factory segment shit. But it's, you know, everybody's walked back, or Nintendo has walked back from all that stuff because it's not free anymore. And that's where they're at. They're looking for, you know, they're looking to expand in places that either leverage where they're already strong, their brand, or where there is, you know, not competition that can just level them with a single $1 billion check. And right now that's all in their media stuff. And so, you know, maybe we see them be more aggressive. It doesn't excuse some of the obvious omissions in their hardware platform or in their software platform, things that need to be resolved. It does sound like they've made some progress on accounts for Switch. I've never owned two of the same system for Nintendo. I mean, obviously, like, I've retired some handhelds, but
yeah, but there's still one that's being used, you know, in right. ongoing fashion.
But like, I've never been the kind of person who would have a Switch Mini and a Switch regular at the same time and try to use both. I don't have multiple people in my house, so I don't need to have two Switches. That kind of stuff, I don't know where they're at anymore. I know they've made some progress, but, you know, define progress. Coming from zero, progress is anything. There's still a ways away from being feature competitive, but
yeah, I think what I would hope for the most, I guess, in future is, you know, when they find themselves in, you know, fairer weather, you know, and the thing is that obviously the cycle now is getting kind of tending towards being longer and longer for, you know, pieces of hardware because it's, well, for platforms because they are more kind of platforms than they are one piece of hardware. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, we haven't seen the last of iterations when it comes to Switch hardware, and there's no telling how long, you know, this kind of generation could last because, I mean, right. You just look at, you know, obviously like PS4 and Xbox One have been around an awful long time, and you know, still only just coming up to, you know, the next wave of those consoles coming out, and I bet that transition will be kind of muddy. You know, it won't be like that hard, especially with what Microsoft's doing. This whole business of like, well, if you buy the game now, then basically you've bought it on the next system as well. It's just a question of, you know, it'll be nicer when it runs on that. You know, I mean, it's getting, those lines of demarcation get softer all the time, but
yeah, I mean, arguably I could see a case where until Nintendo doesn't have to, they just keep making Switch whatever.
Yeah, just sort of iterations rather than hard platform change. But you know, it's whatever sort of exact kind of transitional moment it might be, you know, you'd hope just if you do, if it's not such a desperate thing as you had sort of coming into Switch was pretty desperate, coming into DS was pretty desperate. When you're in that moment, you know, where more like where they were, you know, coming into like 3DS, for instance, you know, that they actually use that moment better in terms of getting themselves on surer footing with these kinds of, you know, companion services and all that kind of thing. You know, when you've got more of a luxury in terms of the timing of, you know, when you're going to make the next kind of move in the market and all that, like, have all these things better synced up. And, you know, you can afford to have it a little bit higher up the priority list when it's not like existential threat in the market kind of times.
Right. And if they're able to keep iterating on their hardware platform, you know, keep the one good thing that's come out of the constant release cycles of like Apple products and Android products is that consumers have gotten more accustomed to, yeah, there are grades and tiers of this, of a product line. It's going to continue to evolve, and at some point you will have to update. And that's not necessarily a great thing for customers, but at least the it should be alleviate the clarity, the Wii U conundrum, as it were. But it does in theory, if they just keep iterating on their Wii U, on their Switch hardware, they can spare the resources that would be devoted to developing the new operating system to adding features that are missing from the operating system.
Well, and also don't forget, you know, they had this sort of scenario for a good long while of having a kind of deal with multiple platforms operating right at once and iterating, or, you know, turning over into entire new sort of generations along those two, you know, portable and home console lines. So again, obviously, look, everything gets more complicated as time goes on, you know, with the platform, but still, it's one platform now. The development resources are, you know, much more integrated and kind of streamlined than they used to be, spread across this platform, you know, the dual platform strategy that they used to have, or, you know, I suppose for a very small period of time, three pillars in the mid-2000s, then, yeah, it's you'd like to think you could make better progress given those facts, but obviously I couldn't tell you exactly how plausible that is based on, you know, what Nintendo actually has at its disposal.
Yeah, I think the idea that they're gonna continue to support a hardware platform to this thing might bode well for them catching up, but the thing is, they're always gonna there's this feeling that they're acceleratingly falling behind. Like, they're falling behind at a faster rate when you do compare things like Game Pass to Nintendo. And that's probably true in a really distinct way. Like, it's probably true because Sony and Microsoft, I almost said Moni, which is not great, are continuing to pump money in at a faster and faster rate into this business that and integrating more and more things into it. So Nintendo might, it's easy to say, like, well, they're not falling behind faster, like they're putting money in now, but it is actually entirely possible they're falling behind faster.
Sure, but also they're not, like, they've sidestepped that kind right of escalation that takes place between those two. So in some ways it's, you know, it's not like necessarily desperately awful that they may well look at it this way. I think they're probably more concerned with their absolute kind of level of functionality and performance in this area rather than relative. But whether their actual performance is absolutely good enough is another question. I think it could and should be better. But in terms of services, that to the part of the question that I've been pleased with, Virtual Console was great. I loved it. You know, I mean, we all wished it was better at the time, and it's still kind of, so there's some elements of that you could say, you know, remain legitimate. But, you know, think of all the games that they ended up on there. You know, all these kind of, you know, things that, you know, might never come back again. And just the sheer amount of retro stuff that you could have on that platform. Lots of issues with it, lots of elements of it that were suboptimal, but the ultimate kind of, outcome was pretty awesome. And still, you know, given from where they were with, you know, there's referenced in GX's email, like the GameCube, they barely even, you know, like they felt like the online adapter thing was just like a token, like dragged out of them kind of thing that they didn't do anything with. What they did with online on Wii was not all bad.
Well, I the Virtual Console is a good answer because the sheer number of games that I played for the first time on there, like I think partly it was because where I was in my life at that point, and also because of the lack of games that interested me made for the Wii, but I caught up with a lot of classic gaming with the Virtual Console, and then they. You know, like they started offering WiiWare, and that's when they kind of turned off the tap for Virtual Console, and I think that's unfortunate. Like, I understand that the games would compete with the new stuff, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, weren't there enough Wii owners out there to actually support all of those games?
We certainly were very like many. Yeah,
a lot of that was just like the lack of. Visibility, right? Yeah. Like they couldn't make the Wii Shop better, it seems. So instead they had to come up with a different channel, the Nintendo channel, and they had like those videos, like that's where they would put their trailers for video games and stuff like that. And that's actually my answer for a service that I liked. Because I actually, oh my god, like I was such a dork. But 10 years ago, there was a good chance that on Mondays, I believe, after work, like I would make myself like spaghetti and sit down in front of Nintendo Week and watch it. I genuinely enjoyed it. So that was, you know, we've talked about like companies having money to burn or back then Nintendo's way to burn money was Nintendo Week.
A little show. I mean, they still do it on YouTube, so.
That's true, but it's, it was a bit different.
Don't work for nothing, y'all.
I know.
It was the height of excess, wasn't it? It was practically like bubble economy, you know, sort of, stunt spending. Nintendo Week. It was that bloody fake beard and beanie hat or whatever didn't pay for itself.
Oh, right. God.
Anyway, I actually enjoyed it, but that was before, like, I had, I guess, an easy way to watch YouTube on a TV, and not that I watch a lot of YouTube. So, like, if Nintendo Week were to come back, I probably wouldn't watch it, but, well, anyway, we don't even have to you know, consider that scenario. It's not gonna happen.
I think you would just be dumbfounded by it, to be honest.
Probably.
I like on my Japanese Wii, the like little DS demos you could get through Nintendo Channel. The first time I ever played Ghost Trick was through that was the novel for me. The reason why I choose the Japanese because you get stuff there first. You know, it'd be before and just weird stuff like they'd have like some like event where they had like, you know, game design students in to make games and then they distribute them through that. I remember talking about something called pull P
nice.
on the show. You know, things like, so I mean, they usually have like the odd sort of playful idea for things and stuff. But yeah, the problem is rarely is it like all integrated and, you know, kind of, like visible. It was a big problem with Wii, you know, for a lot of people, for more people kind of discovering it and becoming active users of it, considering the many, many Wii consoles that were out there in people's homes. That was the issue there, rather than just like so much the core of it. But Switch is very utilitarian, and again, I mean, it's perfectly understandable when you're getting the console out as quickly as possible because you really feel like you might be teetering on the edge of something. But
right,
3 years have passed as well.
Yeah, like do something.
Yeah, we're not made as much progress as we might have hoped in that regard, but.
To that point, you know, when I said that it might feel like they're falling further behind, my fear, I think Nintendo's fear is probably, do their competitors set what consumers expect? And then their service becomes objectively not successful or not meeting their needs.
Yeah.
Because the bare minimum keeps shifting from under you. But I will talk about a bare minimum, a service that I enjoyed ironically. And then we'll talk about one that's actually somewhat desirable. Nintendo had a video service in Japan for the Wii that had all kinds of just weird videos on it, like just all kinds of different stuff. And I enjoyed that intensely because we had one of the Japan correspondents. It might have been Danny, I can't remember, who would do a write-up at NWR about the video content every week. And every time he got to the weekly video about butt-bouncing fighting, where it's just two Japanese women in bikinis basically bouncing off each other, trying to knock each other off a platform, he would just write this incredibly short paragraph just saying exactly like, butt-bouncing video of the week, name, next one. I think it was Danny, I can't remember. And it's just like, every time I got to that line, I just cracked up because it was just like, I'm obligated to mention this video was included. I don't want to talk about it. Moving on. And it was just such a dumb service because Nintendo had the video service on 3DS where they would just post random videos. A lot of them were trailers in 3D. And it's such a dumb thing when you think about like where I am sitting right now recording this podcast, 1, 2, 3, 4 devices that could display that video better than the 3DS could display it. But at the time, that was kind of this dumb, neat thing that the 3DS could do that I somewhat enjoyed. But hell, I watch Netflix on my 3DS, so what the hell is wrong with me? But I think I actually liked, it was on the 3DS, and it was the actual commitment to the themes, like the for lack of a better word, desktop themes. It's a minor thing. It really is. But they allowed people to make them, and lots of really neat ones got made. We've talked about them on the show. Like, it's just having that little, like, complete customization was such a little novel thing that let your desktop kind of just reflect, you know, the vibe you wanted at that time. And I really appreciated it. It's minor, but I think the fact that that's the thing I pick out might be more of a damning statement than it is a praise.
Yeah, but it was especially the sound element I appreciated. You know, you'd have the music and then
and the icons get replaced.
Yeah, the folders and like different artwork, but just like they would make a sound, you know, when you would open the lid and stuff like that. Like it just gave it more personality, which again, we've talked about this before, you know, with stuff like the eShop music and all that, you know, all that. It's all very sterile. Switch, right. Again, it's kind of understandable at first, but less so subsequently.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this email. We got one more. It should be a pretty quick one. So, Greg, would you read our final email?
Very well. Vincent writes, "Hey, J&J Dream Factory.
God damn it.
This subject came up on Talk Nintendo podcast recently, and I know how much you love business. So this idea was too good to pass up. Recently, Final Fantasy VII was remade, breaking the game into multiple full-price games. Neil Ronan and the Talk Nintendo crew suggested remaking Ocarina of Time and ending the first game when you leave Kokiri Village. To maximise J&J Dream Factory profits, what classic Nintendo game would you remake episodically, and where would you put the episode breaks? Thanks and keep up the business."
I made a statement that they will never remake Final Fantasy VII, and I still maintain that I am accurate because they remade like the first 5 hours of Final Fantasy VII.
It's different, you know. It's like it's the apparently you kill Fate or something.
It's significantly different, but at the same time, it doesn't matter because they haven't remade Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah, they've remade some of it. Oh, yeah, sure.
They spent 3 years remaking like 4% of it. I think. So
yeah, I think
none of us will live to the end.
Yeah, if you're looking for a lot of obvious analog for Nintendo, it's not the easiest because you've got to say like it's got to be a game where obviously Final Fantasy VII has this sort of sprawling aspect to it, but of course it was constructed with pre-render graphics.
Right.
So it's like, okay, well, now you're not going to do it pre-ready. You're going to do it's all real time, and it's going to be, you know, the most lavish real time graphics you can possibly do. And it's this ridiculously extensive world that was not built with those sorts of, you know, kind of budget implications in mind at all, because they were, right, you know, 20 years away. Yeah, what's the closest analog for that? And of course, you know, N64 era games don't quite have the same thing, because there was lesser reliance on pre-rendered things, because that was, you know, the N64's sort of comparative advantage was real-time polygonal graphics.
Right.
So Ocarina of Time is not really the perfect substitute in that regard.
And it's too short as well.
Yeah, like, it's not that crazy. That's the point, because like Nintendo at that time were working with the limit of the fact that they had to build all this stuff in real-time graphics. Primitive, you know, polygonal graphics, but at the time it was, you know, as good as they could do. You know, it was less easy to say like, oh, well, can't we just like do way, like have this world be way bigger? Like when you've actually got to build it in 3D, even then, that was a constraint. The thing with something like FF7 is that you weren't building it all in 3D. I mean, I'm sure it was still an enormous amount of work at the time, but, you know, when you were building it the way they built that, it was far more possible to just like go hog wild and have this ridiculously long thing. And then, like, when you're faced with remaking that with modern graphics, it's like, good God. I mean, that is a tall order. and so it's maybe you'd have to possibly go farther back. Maybe you'd have to look at maybe the like a Super Nintendo era thing for something, right, from Nintendo that could be that kind of undertaking.
So I've got one that scares me, because I'm playing with fire, and I've got one that is too good, and I'm going to sit on it for a second. In terms of, it actually checks off some of the checkboxes you mentioned, for a lot of the same reason. What if they took the two Baten Kaitos games, which we were talking about off the air, and just shuffled them up to get chronological order and maybe do some foreshadowing and backshadowing by mixing the story and running it asynchronously, but then just chop those two games up into eight games? Because again, pre-rendered backgrounds, which that game's got a shitload of them. Huge sprawling narrative that goes on forever. Oh yeah. Lots of like twist points where you could just stick a cliffhanger and call it a day. Absolutely. A brand now that's even more popular than it was then, because it's from the makers of Xenoblade Chronicles. Just keep stacking them until you get there, and you would end up with a lot of games, many, many games, many 20-hour long games that they could conceivably charge money for, and just go full, like, I'm going to go with the Dream Factory special on this. And I think it would actually make those games a little bit better if you could put finite conclusion points on them every 20 hours and then, like, hey, come back in 3 months and we'll have another one for you. The only JRPG series I could think of that really did that were those the Dot Hack games on PS2, where it was like, yeah, these games are pretty much done. I think they were, like, they finished the last one after like the third one was already out of five, so like the time was on their side. But really, it was about being episodic. It was about like, we're gonna release one of these things at full price. Infection, what is it? Infection something quarantine. Like, so they just released these things on a cycle because that was part of the engagement strategy. They probably could have put the entire fucking game on one disc if they wanted to, but they didn't. In part because they chopped that thing up for more money, and in part because by having it episodic, they felt like it created a different experience. I think if you were to break the two Baten Kaitos games into interleaved plots, because there is some connection there, you could probably build a bunch of finite conclusions that set up another chapter and make some money that way. But you wouldn't be able to... And I don't know how Square Enix is going to handle it. How are they going to sell Final Fantasy Remake Part 3? Like, they know what their maximum sales number is. It's Final Fantasy Remake Part 2 sales. You can't sell more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how do you market that thing? Especially because they had the audacity to just call this one Remake. Like, is it Remake 2? Is it Final Fantasy Remake - 2? Like, yeah, it's bad.
Are you challenging Square to come up with a crazy title?
No, I'm challenging them to come up with a marketable title.
Hmm.
Those are very different things.
Since when is that a consideration for Square?
I'm suggesting,
especially with Nomura being at the helm of this thing.
I'm suggesting maybe it should be. I'm just suggesting that maybe they should think about it. Just for a second. Just give it a good long think. That's all. That's all I'm suggesting. Do you have one, Guillaume?
Let me know if this is if this makes sense. So, Kirby Superstar is basically like a collection, quote unquote, of several Kirby games. Except really, it's not. It's just the one game. It's just got various modes, and anyway, it's a weird structure. Obviously, the obvious thing to do is to just chop up Kirby Superstar into the 8 games that this cart had. 8 games in one. Well, you make them each their own thing. And of course, you start with Spring Breeze, which was itself a remake of the first Kirby game, Kirby's Dream Land. But, you know, you could play with the power-ups of Superstar. So some of the levels were a little bit different. They were merged, or like some bosses were cut. You extend that game by adding back the bosses that were cut in the first place. And so, basically it's like 2 remakes in one, right? You're making Spring Breeze, which itself was a remake, so it's all, I don't know. Does that make sense?
In a sense.
I don't know if you actually want to go and remake the other ones. I think that that's, I don't know, the stroke of genius is right there. Like you remake the mini game that was itself a remake of a full game, but now it's back to being just part of a set of several games. You know,
now it's a part of a whole in a different way. In that it's part of a whole that may or may not ever actually get the subsequent episodes, because presumably it would be, going to need to be demonstrated commercially that it'd be worthwhile.
That's right. Yeah. If you want Kirby Superstar Remake Part 2, you better buy this game. I've got one really insidious one. Does anybody else want to go before I drop it?
Yeah, my big one, it's the only one I could really think of. It's just a Nintendo game that's kind of famously sprawling, and it's kind of built around the fact that, you know, the way that game was constructed is not at all, you know, something that had to worry about, you know, the way that games would be constructed now. So Pokemon Gold and Silver.
Damn it!
Yeah, if you were all Crystal, I guess, in the third version, I don't know how much, if that like added much more or anything, but yeah, those games, that generation of Pokemon, the thought of like remaking that on a like really big scale, like not like so much the let's go Eevee, let's go Pikachu kind of scale that they did with the original generation of Pokemon, but more on the like Sword and Shield, but like turn it up even more. Like in terms of like how much you're changing it and how much you're trying to kind of push, you know, how kind of good it's going to look. And then, you know, you've got this whole like second quest essentially in the original game. Like that would seem like if there was ever a Nintendo, you know, obviously it was Game Freak game, but you know, something in the Nintendo kind of family, a game that if he was going to do a really kind of big time ground up remake, and it's supposed to be kind of really gorgeous and all that, you'd almost have to break it up and sell it piece by piece. And you could, because I mean, they've been doing that with Pokemon for 80 years, along different lines, along the lines of, oh well, there's some exclusive Pokemon in this version, or right, there's the third version coming, or now we've got DLC chapters coming, essentially
version exclusive variants of DLC chapters, yeah, as well.
DLC season pass or whatever. But yeah, that to me is like the fit for all the kind of things we're looking for here.
So yeah, that was the one I was going with, but I was going to talk about it pure business style. So you've got this game that is massive, as you mentioned. It's really got three arcs. It's got collecting the gym badges on Johto. It's got the Elite Four, and then it's got collecting the gym badges on Kanto, which are now apparently super gyms compared to what they were a couple years earlier. And then there's the post-game arc of hunting down Red and kicking his ass, which isn't a long arc, but it could be. So you
yeah,
also
that's
have
the thing. I mean, if you were gonna go the episodic mode, once you've sort of said, you know, we can't do this all in one, or once you go the episodic route, what you could then start doing is actually expand on certain elements in the past,
filler.
Which presumably is what's happening with FF7 remake.
That is explicitly what is happening there. Yes. So here's the plan. So the Neil's suggestion of once you leave the village being like, that's too short. That's ridiculous. I'm not going to say like once you leave whatever the pallet town is in Johto. I can't remember. End of the first episode. I think it's you collect the first four badges, and they reorient the. I can't remember what the Team Rocket analog is in that game. It might still just been Team Rocket. Like you have your showdown with them as the conclusion of the first game, which probably moves their schedule up a little bit. But again, it's a remake. You can do that. Part two is the second four badges, and maybe you finish off the bad team. Like, they come back around. Part three, they're gone. Bad team is gone. Part three is all about getting to the Elite Four. So maybe you have to do some more, like, some besides just a big cave you have to go through like it is in every game. Maybe there's a tournament like there is in the TV show where you had to qualify for a tournament, and then you participated in the tournament, and then Ash learns a bunch of life lessons that I'll probably forget next season before actually getting to face the Elite Four. So you could like build it up that way. And maybe there's like stuff like, okay, you've got a week before your next round of matches. So why don't you go train? And then, you know, whatever. You could just reuse the towns and you can go train back in the towns he was already in. Episode four is going to Kanto, traveling there, and maybe the first few gyms if you want. Episode 5 is finishing off the gyms, and episode 6 is the second, is like defending his title at the Elite Four. Done. I've made 6 episodes out of Pokemon, and they'll fucking sell because it's Pokemon. Done. Cash out. That's business right there. You could sell each one of those at like $40 a head, and I bet you'd get it. You could sell a season pass. You won't see this, the end. We don't even tell you what system the last episode is going to be on because we don't know. But you can give us the money now anyway. I bet that would make a depressing amount of money, especially if you had version-specific versions of the 8 episodes. It's like, oh, if you want a Vulpix, you're going to have to get the gold version of Chapter 6. But if you want it, but that's it. Like, that's the only time it shows up. Chapter 6 gold version. It's like, you could be so devious and so evil. Like, you could maximally be evil. And really, that's the J&J Dream Factory experience. If you ask for the dream, you get the factory. And also, again, the slogan is better living through chemicals. So, you know, time doesn't treat J&J Dream Factory well either. But that is going to do it for emails and, in fact, for our show this week. You could send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com only one time because I front-loaded it. Do we have anything we want to promote this week?
Nope.
Great. In that case, Greg, what is our conclusion music for this week?
Well, there's a couple of notable anniversaries right around about now. There's a 40th anniversary of Empire Strikes Back, which, of course, is not a video game, but good God, its imagery has been in a lot of video games, especially...
Officially in that.
Name one.
Nintendo, you know, related stuff that was really supposed
Empire Strikes Back, there you go, Guillaume, I named one.
Stuff that was really supposed to help sell Nintendo systems with Shadows of the Empire and Rogue Leader. But no, it's not that. It's not the 40th anniversary of Pac-Man either. That was another one, but something a little closer to home. 20th anniversary of Perfect Dark, which is... Yeah, a little bit unsettling. That it's
Is it just John's rendition of Dr. Carrington?
Yeah, it's a shame that Daniel Carrington isn't with us. That retroactive that we did on it is like 9 years old, virtually.
Oh my god!
Yeah, not quite equidistant, but disturbingly close.
It sounded like he got the inside of his palate stung by a bee and it had swollen up.
He hadn't taken his Animal Crossing medicine to fix it yet. And so, it's 20 years. I didn't quite play it at launch because I was in the middle of, you know, pretty dense exam season. So kind of waited until, I think it was like early June by the time I had like a little gap. And started playing it, but it's just scary to think that was 20 years ago.
I distinctly remember sitting down and playing it when it came out and just grinding through that game. And 20 years ago is really, really sad.
It really dominated that summer of 2000 because obviously it played the single player quite a lot. You know, it was a decent length campaign, but then you got the extra difficulties kind of add on to it a lot if you're going for those. But the multiplayer, there's so much multiplayer that's been pissing about with the Sims and all the different options you could have. I mean, there was a lot of fun to be had with that game and under the right circumstances. And I pretty much had them that summer, to be fair. So going with a song from this, I burned the end credits a little bit back during that retroactive years ago, which if you're interested is like, I think it's in the 240s. It's in two parts because there's like the multiplayer. Oh, there's the multiplayer episode and then there's the single player episode.
I can give you the exact number. It is. So the RFN page at the Resetera thread has a lot of them in there. It's not up to date, but Xander over at from NWR has actually documented the whole list, and it is loading. Damn it! Come on. There's ones in here I forgot we did.
it's been a lot of them.
It's 245 and 248.
Yeah, so I said two parts, roughly.
It is 9 years to the day almost. We did it on May 29th, 2011 was the episode release date.
Yeah, well, so the actual anniversary of the game's release is the 22nd, which it currently is both with all of us at this point.
Yeah, we've all crossed the line.
But it's very, very memorable time spent with that game. Kind of interested soundtrack of it. It's apparently originally it was not going to be Grant Kirkhope coming back from GoldenEye because he was busy doing like DK64 and other stuff. But then the composer who was working on it was one of the people that left to go to the Free Radical group that would do Time Splitters. So Kirkhope comes back in and kind of finishes the soundtrack. And this one that I'm going to use here, which is from the Pelagic 2 mission, it kind of sums up definitely you could kind of feel the kind of GoldenEye soundtrack in there, but with the sci-fi stuff kind of layered on top. And especially in retrospect, some of that sort of banjo-ness is still very apparent as well. So it's a fun sort of cocktail of elements.
Excellent. Well, on that, it is time for us to go. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.